Anna and Oliver, big siblings extraordinaire, are here to tell you all about what to expect when your family is expecting and what life will really be like once a new baby arrives. The dynamic duo cover everything from nap time to stinky diapers and share helpful ideas for parents on how to make life as a big brother or sister as filled with fun and love as it can be. So get ready, get set, time to welcome a new baby next on Through the Eyes of Women. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program featuring the lives and perspectives of women, local, national, and international. Hi, my name is Brenda Starr, and I'm your host today on Through the Eyes of Women, and my guest is Elizabeth Rush. She's written more than 100 articles for magazines such as Parents, American Baby, Working Mother, is a documentary story editor, a columnist for Child Magazine, and author of many award-winning children's books. Her latest book is called Ready, Set, Baby. Elizabeth, welcome to Through the Eyes of Women.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, before we get started, how about telling us a little bit about yourself?
Well, you did a pretty great job with the introduction. I live in Portland, Oregon, and have two children and have been writing about parenting and child development for over two decades. For the past 10 or 15 years, I've also been writing children's books. I write fiction and nonfiction, everything from picture books to graphic novels to I'm currently working on actually a YA novel as well. So one of the things I love about being a writer is that I can really write about anything that interests me, and I found many venues to do that.
You do have a very natural curiosity. Just to list the plethora of books, because it does really fit very well with your interests. A Day with No Crayons, Electrical Wizard, How Nikola Tesla Lit Up the World. That's very popular, especially with that car that I would like right now.
Me too.
Eruption, Volcanoes, and the Science of Saving Lives. For the Love of Music, The Remarkable Story of Maria Anna Mozart. Generation Fix, Young Ideas for a Better World. The Mighty Mars Rovers, The Incredible Adventures of Spirit and Opportunity. They must be the names of the two rovers.
Of the rovers, yes, that's right.
Muddy Max, The Mystery of Marsh Creek. The Next Wave, The Quest to Harness the Power of the Oceans. The Planet Hunter, The Story Behind What Happened to Pluto. Volcano Rising, Will It Blow, Become a Volcano Detective at Mount St. Helens, of which I think is in my son. I was in Montana then. And The Music of Life.
Bartolomeo Cristofori and The Invention of the Piano.
Yes. What made you want to write? I mean, obviously your interests are wide and vast.
Well, actually, I think the reason I became a writer is because my interests are so wide and vast. When I was a student, I literally loved every subject. I loved math and science and social studies and history. I loved writing poetry and looking at a microscope and everything. I still find the world to just be a fascinating place. And I had a really hard time figuring out what I would be when I grew up because I couldn't choose. I couldn't commit to, well, I'm just going to be a scientist or I'm just going to be a historian. I could imagine myself in all of those roles, but I didn't want to shut out any other opportunities. And so for me, being a writer is absolutely the perfect job because anything that interests me, anything I read about in the newspaper or online or in a book, can turn into a book project or an article or something that I can explore. I sometimes kind of feel like I get like little master's degrees and PhDs and all these different subjects because that's how well I have to know some of this material to write about it. So I also love the process of writing. I mean, I love finding the story, like finding how to write about a subject in a way that's going to be really appealing to my readers. I want my nonfiction to read like fiction. I want my fiction to feel really real, like it's almost nonfiction. So I love the challenges that writing also poses to me.
Did you start as a child to write?
As a kid, you know, I did everything. I did write some poetry. I have still a little construction paper folded and stapled booklet that I wrote. I was starting to write a chapter book about two girls who had horses who were competitive and were racing against them. And the chapter's really funny because, like, when there's a race going on, they go, like, you know, number one was ahead, then two, then then one inched ahead, you know. So I was obviously trying to put drama into the story. I also wrote plays with my best friend. So we would write plays and put them on for our families. And I wrote songs for the guitar. I play the guitar, and my friend and I would write songs. But I don't remember thinking, oh, when I grow up, I want to be a writer. As I said, I was thinking, when I grow up, I want to do everything. And eventually I figured out that writing would get me there, would let me do everything.
Now, you grew up with, how many siblings did you have?
Oh, I have three brothers and two sisters. Yeah, so we're like the Brady Bunch.
And you were in the middle, I think?
Right in the middle, yep.
Because I find that often middle children have to not only entertain yourselves, but you get so much from the older ones. Things percolate in your mind, and then you want to share it with the younger ones. Did you find that that actually happened to you?
Yeah, that's true. I felt like when you grow up in a big family like that, there's always something going on. Someone's always doing something. And sometimes I would find myself with the older kids, you know, following their interests. And sometimes, as you said, I would be maybe leading the younger children, or sometimes they may do something and I would get involved with it. So I definitely felt like in that environment, there were a lot of options, a lot of ways to go, and a lot of, you know, as you said, like reaching up to the older kids, but also being able to be young and playful for as long as I wanted to as well with the younger kids.
And your parents must have nurtured that curiosity in you.
Yeah, they knew that I was a big reader. So there were many trips to the library, and I would check out the maximum number of books and haul them home. My mom would also take me, I remember going to planetariums, and I remember going to, she would haul all six of us to Civil War battlefields, you know, camping trips, you know, the kinds of things that seemed like they would be a real challenge to do with six children, but she somehow managed it. And so, you know, I'm really grateful for those experiences, and also try to emulate that with my own children, just really offering them lots of opportunities to explore the world.
Oh, that's a wonderful thing. And you focus on often narrative nonfiction, but also science and art. You said travel writing and essays. Your humor, though, I really found wonderful. And I read something that said about you, she even wore the same pair of hiking socks for 10 days straight without washing for a gear review for Backpacker Magazine.
That's right.
Now, that's really getting down with the subject there, Elizabeth.
That's right. That was one of those situations where I hadn't really thought it through when Backpacker called me and said, do you want to test hiking socks? I said, yeah, I hike all the time. I'd love to. So they sent me a box with 10 pairs of hiking socks with directions that, you know, to really test them properly, you have to wear them 10 days in a row like you would if you're backpacking. Well, I hadn't really done the math to realize that that meant 10 times 10, that's 100 days, most of which I'm wearing dirty old hiking socks. So, yeah, you know, it's, I wore them all summer, and I was probably stinkier that summer than I've ever been before. But, you know, it's important. People need to know which hiking socks to buy.
You've just done a plethora of amazing things in your life that you translate into writing. You've traveled to the oil fields of Southern California. You've talked with national experts on so many different subjects. How do you decide to choose what you're going to write about?
Well, that is probably one of my biggest challenges. I have lots of ideas, and I have a long to-do list. I hope I live a long and healthy life because there are a lot of things I want to write about. When the stories that interest me are stories that have been missed, either in history or in science, I tend to write not necessarily what everybody else is writing about. It might seem like it by the topics that I pick, but I'm finding stories within those topics that have been missed. So, like, for example, you know, I've written 3 books on volcanoes, and one might argue that volcanoes, you know, that that's an area that's pretty well covered, especially in children's literature. And in a way, they're right. There are many, many books on volcanoes. But none of the books talked about the most common kind of eruption, which is a dome-building eruption. So when a volcano is growing, it's just kind of growing a dome in its center, and it's not dangerous. It's not blowing up and, you know, blasting and causing evacuations. It's just this really incredible process of shaping our landscape and creating mountains and islands. And so I wrote a book that was just specifically on that aspect of volcanology. You know, my book about Maria Mozart came about because I just read a little tiny a little news mention that said something about Wolfgang Mozart having a sister who was a child prodigy, and I thought, well, I never knew that. And so I immediately, like, went online to see what was written about her. There wasn't very much, but I learned little bits that she was also a child prodigy. She had traveled Europe with Wolfgang, playing, performing with him. And then I started digging into some of the primary sources, and I found out that there were news reports that said she was said to be the better musician, and that she was his earliest musical inspiration, and that his first symphony is in her handwriting, you know. And so I really felt like it was this story that had been missed. So many people know Wolfgang Mozart, but they don't know about Maria Anna, who was his earliest musical inspiration and who was a talented musician in her own right, and actually composed her own music that Wolfgang said in a letter was beautiful. And so I really love to tell stories that maybe people have missed or overlooked. So that's part of it. It's also just a simple thing. If it interests me, if I think it's going to be fun to report on or write about, if it's going to give me a great experience. Like, I'm working now on a book about the avalanche rescue dogs of Crystal Mountain. So I've been up to Crystal Mountain, which is a ski resort, with these dogs and handlers who are training the dogs to sniff out people who are buried under snow. And the dogs are just adorable, and the people are so passionate, and it's a beautiful setting. And so that's been a really fun project.
Well, with your writing, you do essays, you also teach, you also will help people with their books. But one thing I found fascinating is you were a story editor for Broken, which is a documentary. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. That one came about actually kind of by accident. My neighbor, Lynn Spencer, was the filmmaker for that. She and I walk our dogs together in the forest near our home in Portland, you know, probably 2 or 3 times a week. And she talks about her work, and I talk about my work. And she was telling me about the documentary that she was working on about a dancer from Ballet BC. She was the prima ballerina who had a hip injury and struggled to hide it and to dance on. Eventually, she had to have a surgery, but she strove to come back. And ultimately, she had to have a hip replacement. And so the story was really about, you know, can an injury stop an artist? Can someone who has a passion in their life, what do they do when that passion is threatened and maybe taken away? So anyway, she was telling me about the story and, you know, struggling with the structure, and, you know, I was listening and chatting with her, and eventually I said, you know, can I come see what you're doing? Can I watch it? And of course, when I watch anything, I have a million opinions. So I was like, well, you could, you know, what if you started here and you really developed her character, and then you could build the tension here? So I was applying the same principles of storytelling that I use in my books to her film. And since we're neighbors, this happened over several months, and I was kind of going back and forth with her and looking at her edits. And at the end, she said, you know, I don't know if you realize this, but you were the story editor, so I'm giving you a film credit as a story editor for this film. So it premiered in Whistler, has played in Toronto, Montreal, and is actually having its U.S. premiere in Portland at the end of April. So, yeah, super exciting to be involved in a new kind of media.
Well, taking walks can be very inspirational.
Yes. I don't know what I would do without my dog and my forest and my hiking legs.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Through the Eyes of Women here on KHSU. I'm your host, Brenda Starr, and my guest is author Elizabeth Rush. We're talking about her life, her writing, and her latest book, Ready, Set, Baby. So why children? Why did you decide to write for children?
I had been writing for a number of the parenting magazines, as you said in the introduction, writing for Parents and Working Mother and American Baby, and writing a lot about, I've always been interested in education and child development, and I was writing a lot about children, and around the same time, I got pregnant, and I was going to have my own child, and I really started to think about that I wanted to write for children, that I wanted to take some of what I learned and know about child development and also just my excitement for the world and share that with my children, but also other children in the world. So I took a summer off from magazine writing because I was mostly doing magazine writing then, and I wrote a children's book and, you know, started going to children's book conferences and learning more about it, and just found it really rewarding to have these projects that I could envision what they would look like, really think through the structure and how to present them. I love the idea of working with both text and illustrations and what you can bring to a story by doing that, by having that control. And I just love to read. I loved it when my parents read to me. I love reading to my children. And it just seemed like such a wonderful job to be able to put together, you know, a wonderful reading experience for a young person, either something that someone would read aloud or that, you know, say an 8 or 9 or 10 year old would, you know, disappear into their bed with a flashlight late at night reading. You know, it just felt like the best job in the world. So, you know, after that first manuscript, I kind of never went back. I just kept writing them and writing them until eventually one sold, and then my children's book career was launched.
Well, you said that I realized that kids see the world differently than adults could ever imagine, and you've been interesting in children's perspectives ever since. I think I also read that you talk to a lot of children in order to get their perspectives when you're writing a book.
Yeah, well, I had a wonderful opportunity when I was a contributing editor at Child Magazine. I wrote this monthly column called Kids Speak, where I interviewed kids about things in their lives, like where do your parents get their money? You know, why do you have to eat your vegetables? What helps you get to sleep at night? And I had so much fun talking to, you know, 5, 6, 7, and 8 year olds. And hearing their thoughts on their world and really coming to realize that the way they see things is quite different from how we see them. For one of the columns, actually, I asked 6-year-olds, what would you tell a friend who was expecting a new sibling in the family? And this was part of what gave me the idea for Ready, Set, Baby. What they said was so funny and really vivid. Like, I remember one said something like, never touch his face, or don't drop him. You know, another said, like, just give them a rattle and let them hit you, and it doesn't hurt, and they laugh, you know. So it just was such a different perspective that when I was pregnant with my second child, I just remember thinking, like, that I wish that my son would have a book that would kind of collect some of these pieces of advice from kids who had already been there, who knew what it was really like to have a new baby in the home. And, you know, one of the things I found when writing Ready, Set, Baby is that, in a way, that experience has really transformed some of my parenting approach. You know, it's kind of become ingrained in me that when either of my children faces a big transition, you know, like welcoming a new baby, but also starting school or starting their first sports team, you know, I find myself again and again trying to understand what it's like for them, what they think of the situation, how they interpret things that I might say. And I feel like that's also really informed my parenting, as well as creating just a lovely bond with my own children.
Well, that brings us to Anna and Oliver, who in the book Ready, Set, Baby are offering their helpful ideas, not only to other kids, but to parents. And knowing who you are, you also include in the back of the book some helpful tips and even websites for parents to go to. I want to read something, one of my favorite pages. It's called Tips for Entertaining. Actually, big kids are the absolute best at fixing a bored baby. Start off easy, singing a song, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. If that doesn't work, launch into something more fun. On top of spaghetti. Don't forget to dance as silly as you can. Okay, more tips for entertaining. Play peekaboo. Make funny faces. Make armpit farts. Play peekaboo while making funny faces. Play peekaboo while making funny faces and armpit farts. If all this doesn't work, you might have a tired baby on your hands. We try to think about that, what we'd like when we're tired. Rub your baby's feet or her back or jiggle her crib like she's on a train ride. Just don't get carried away and jiggle too hard or blow a whistle. The book is wonderful. The children are wonderful and the illustrations are just wonderful. Let's talk about Quinn Lang, your illustrator.
Oh, aren't they just lovely?
Yes.
I know. She did such a splendid job.
The way that it's set up, you have the narrative, then you also have the children are talking, so you have the balloons there for them speaking. And they're just children. I mean, they're just kids being kids. And their perspective around this new little critter that's coming in their house is just delightful. So how did you work with her on, or decide as a writer, how do you decide on your illustrator?
Yeah, well, you're referring to a couple things about the book that I want to talk about. One is kind of the structure of it. When I first wrote it, it was just kind of straightforward, the children kind of narrating and saying, you know, it was like this and do this, and it was like this and do this. And it was good. It was you know, fresh and different. But after I wrote my first graphic novel, which was Muddy Max, The Mystery of Marsh Creek, I got the idea of kind of melding the picture book text, like the direct narration, with little comics where, as you said, the kids talk in speech bubbles. And I feel like the book really came to life when I did that because I had two kind of approaches that I could use and figure out which would be the better way to get an idea across, right? So I could have the kids either talking directly to the reader about what something was like, or I could show a little scene, a little picture of something going on, like, you know, there's a part where they're talking about holding the baby and, you know, kind of giving some tips about that, and Oliver is sitting on the couch, and behind him the parents are yelling, support the head, support the head, you know, which is just something that happens every time a child touches a baby. So that kind of melding of a picture book text with comics was something that I came up with that I think really helped with the structure of the book. And then in terms of choosing an illustrator, Houghton Mifflin is my publisher. Generally what happens is they send, you know, a list of illustrators to me and say, you know, what do you think about these? And Quinn, I think, I don't remember if she was in a list of them or if it was just one that Cynthia had sent me. You know, she just had the loveliest way of capturing the movement and the silliness and the seriousness of little kids. And I just feel like her lively, colorful watercolors give the character so much life and movement and humor. She just did a perfect job.
It really is delightful. And I really like the expressions that the children use, too. Anna and Oliver, you get to know them from the first page. I love how you have them introduce the book. It looks like a little post-it, and they're like, a new baby's headed your way. We got one of those. Lots of people are probably telling you what to expect, but kids in the know can give you the real deal. Don't worry. It's not as hard as it seems. We were great right away. Well, almost right away, Anna and Oliver. I mean, it's if you know those children, and it's if you know their baby by the end of the book as well.
And you sort of love them, too. I mean, I fell in love with the kids as I was writing the book. And then when Quinn did the illustrations, I fell in love with them all over again, seeing her view of what they look like and how they interact with each other and with the baby. So I really feel like the characters have really sprung to life in a way that's so, so delightful. And it's so great to hear you read the book aloud, because one of the things I really wanted to do is capture those kids' voices to really kind of amalgamate everything that I've heard, you know, kids say about having a new baby, and really kind of try to get it from their point of view and in their voice. And it was so fun to hear you read them because it, yeah, they sound like real kids to me when you read it. So that feels good.
Oh, good. Well, one of the joyous jobs I'd ever had was working at a preschool. And
oh, really?
Yes, yes. And it was. It was the most fabulous job, really, I've ever had. And I loved reading. And I could read upside down, and I do all the characters. And children love that. And then they love to put their own voices in there as well. So once you get them inspired by that, and that's when, as soon as I opened the book, I thought, oh, I think of all those children. from decades ago, thinking how they would love a book like this. And this is very specific, but yet you say, I am inspired by stories of exploration and discovery, stories that have been overlooked by history, and stories that grapple with persistent questions. Whether writing fiction or nonfiction for children or adults or teaching workshops, I hope my work opens doors, opens minds, opens possibilities. I think you have opened a lot of doors for children with your science, with your art, with your delightful way that you write. You've opened their minds and you've opened possibilities of what other children might think that they might do with their life. How do you think of that for yourself, of what you're giving to the world?
I want my work to be a gift to the world. I want it, my books to be a gift to whoever hands that it falls into. I don't know what happens with my books when I'm done writing them. You know, it's kind of a strange job being a writer. You know, you work in your office and you have all these ideas and dreams and you put them all in experiences and people you've talked to and you put them all into these books and they go out and they're published and they go out into the world and they're in libraries and bookstores and in people's homes. And for the most part, I don't know what happens with them. Once in a while, I'm at a signing and, you know, a girl will come up hugging the Mars Rover book and say, you know, I might want to be an astronaut, or I might want to be a space explorer. You know, and then she looks at my volcano book that I'm selling and she says, or what's that? You know, volcanoes, maybe I want to be a volcanologist, right? So sometimes I get experience of seeing maybe what I've stimulated in a young reader's mind. But mostly it's just me in my office dreaming and hoping that that my work is a force for power and good and inspiration in the world.
Well, I think it is. That's just this woman's perspective.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
It's also just lovely to talk to you and hear my work from your perspective. You know, it's like you spend so much time doing things on your own, but to see how somebody else interprets your work is really encouraging and also, you know, kind of an added life force to my work, so I appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. You know, I interview a lot of authors, and you figure it is a very lonely in a way job. I mean, I know you get inspiration from your own children and you talk with children and you have at least, you know, you have the give and take. But often for authors, it is. It's a lot of research and you put it out there and then you wonder, it's not just the critics. You know, it's how are families responding to this? How are children responding to this? How are the kids that go to my local library do this? And I do want you to know I always donate these books to my local elementary school library.
Oh, that's great. So their life will go on. I love to hear that.
Yes, yes. And it does. Oh, blah, da, as my mom would say. Well, I want to thank you so much for being an inspiration for children. As you were talking about that little girl who decided, hey, I might want to be an astronaut. I want to be a volcanologist. And just opening those minds and planting that seed and knowing that you're doing that. And you never know who might come up to you years from now at a book signing and say, when I read that book, it made me think a lot. And that's a very important part of being an author. Well, thank you for following your passion, Elizabeth Rush, and thank you for your gifts of your books.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I've been your host, Brenda Starr, and I've been speaking with award-winning book author, magazine writer, editor, writing teacher, and speaker, Elizabeth Rush, about her new book, Ready, Set, Baby. For more information, you can visit ElizabethRush.com. That's Elizabeth, RUSCH.com. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's engineer and editor, Katie Whiteside, and to the entire Through the Eyes of Women team. To listen to this program again, visit our blog at khsuwomen.com, where you can also learn more about the show and post listener comments. Join us again next Monday at 1:30, right here on KHSU.